Welcome once again to the Learning Digital Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and you are listening to episode number 54. On this episode, we got a lot in store for you. We actually got two guests, not one, but two. The first guest is a longtime listener of the show and a contributing commenter, Jason Kate. He's an accomplished photographer in his own right, hailing from Ontario, Canada, and his niches include portraiture, pets, and more recently, you said you were expanding to include modeling and wedding photography this year, right, Jason?
I am attempting to, yes, sir.
Well, congratulations and welcome to the show.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on. Our second guest is none other than Nicolezy. Nicolezy was on the show a while back. Excuse me, Nicole Young. I should give your full name. Nicole Young. She's a full-time photographer and author living in Salt Lake City. Or no, you're not in Salt Lake City. You're in, where are you? You're in Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah. You're in the Valley. It's close.
It's close enough. Yeah. She's in Utah anyway, and she specializes in commercial photography. And you probably know her a lot from her work with iStock Photos. She's licensing much of her work through there. You're accredited as an ACE expert, aren't you? You're on CS4. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else you got going on? Oh, you got your books. You got your 70 and your 60D.
Yep.
The Snapshots to Great Shot series. I think the other author in that is Jeff Revelle. So that's a nice blend there in all the books. Yeah. And you've got two of them under your own belt now. Congratulations for that as well.
Thanks.
Quick nod before we get started. Like to give some thanks to the sponsors of the Learning Digital Photography Podcast and CanonBlogger.com. And that sponsor is Nations Photo Lab. They've been a longtime sponsor of the show, so I wanted to give some shout-outs to them. If you want to get great quality lab prints at great consumer prices, check them out at NationsPhotoLab.com. So a little plug there for them. Thank you very much. Getting started with this week's show, we're changing. I don't know if people have noticed in the past, but we're changing things up a little bit. We're no longer doing news, short discussion, Q&A. I figure people can get their news from so many resources, we're just not going to cover news anymore. So we're just going to get to the meat of the show, and the meat of this show is striking a balance because there's so many things that we're assaulted from all sides, whether it's personal and client work and shooting versus promoting and marketing your business, and whether it's working on your business and working on photography and taking some downtime. And I wanted to hit on all these different aspects of really how to strike a balance, and I wanted to get a good cross-section, so I thought this would be good for a multiple-person show, which is why I brought Jason and Nicole in. So without further ado, I'd like to start with Nicole, if you don't mind, talking about personal work versus client work. And the reason why I wanted Nicole to go first is because of the very nature of her photography. And here it's really all about, you know, what brings a client to you is your own creative vision or your own creative talents. And at the same time, being able to recognize what client needs are. So how do you strike a balance between your own creative expression and expressing the vision of the client? And it's kind of an interesting thing to have to balance. So, Nicole, if you don't mind, I'd like to get your thoughts and perspectives on how you balance personal versus client work.
Sure. Well, with the nature of the photography that I do, I don't really actually have clients unless I choose to, and I usually choose not to because I create photos and I basically photograph whatever I want to, and then I put them in my portfolio on iStock, and then I just hope that people want to use them. So it's kind of a strange business model because I don't have someone telling me what to create, and you know, because they're going to use it for a specific project. I get to come up with all of my ideas. So in some weird way, it's kind of like
it's almost the same.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a balance, you know, because I do have things that I want to photograph that I might know in my head, oh, this will never sell. You know, I just want to create it because I want to create it. I might still upload it and put it on in my portfolio. But, you know, there's other things that I know. I know that, say, like a team business photograph with a bunch of multi-ethnic people in the same room, that's more likely to make me money. So,
sure.
You know, so mm-hmm. Those kinds of shoots, I'll put those together. I just did something like that in August. That's why I'm mentioning it, and it's done pretty well, you know, but it's still that little bit of me that's like, well, I don't do it unless I really want to, you know?
Right.
So I'm probably a bad person to ask this because a lot of my work is still kind of personal. So I kind of try and find a balance within that, but then, I mean, it's still work, you know? So.
Well, and see, that's the thing though, because you're calling it your personal work, but I'm wondering more because you are known so well for your work with iStock Photo, it's like you know what people want.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what sells, you know what works in the stock photography market, whether it's multi-ethnic teen groups, like you said, in some setting, or, you know, someone holding a neutral bag of potato chips and eating them, or with a headset on, or whatever. It's like, you know what works, and is that how you've defined your own personal workflow, or do you tailor your workflow so that you say, okay, this is just a personal project I want to do for the sake of doing it. Okay, and now this is my stock photography work. Do you make that distinction there?
Yeah, well, I do. I don't look at things and say, okay, this is the kind of photo that's going to sell, so I'm going to create it. You know, because I think then that just becomes, that can drain you, you know, because there's certain types of photography. Stock photography is really complicated because there are so many different genres of images, and you really, like, for example, I've actually gotten into food photography lately, and I know it does well, the photos will sell, but I do it because I love it, you know, and there's not a, you know, whenever I'm creating an image, I'm not going, oh, I got to make this look like this because someone's going to buy it. No, I do it because I absolutely love it. I make it look exactly what I want it to look like. So I guess, like, to go with the personal stuff that I do, I've actually kind of started to get outside of photography because, you know, I guess all of my photography kind of seems like work. I've been doing pottery and painting. You know, I mean, I can still integrate them. You know, I can still photograph a painting and put it on iStock, but that's just kind of bonus. You know, and the pottery that I'm creating, I'll probably use in my photo shoots. But I'm trying to kind of make that completely. I'm not, you know, it's helping my work. You know, it's definitely, you know, inspiration, creativity, and stuff. But it's not like I'm doing it specifically to make money.
Right.
What about when you do your photo walks in Utah, Nicole?
Oh,
when you do your photo walk, do you maintain that structure of shooting while in the back of your head you're thinking, I could use this as an iStock photo, or, you know, do you just let loose and go, you know, click 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 just to get it out of your system?
I usually just do it for fun. It's like a social event for me. iStock actually just introduced editorial, so I'll probably start, you know, in the back of my head, I'll probably have like, oh, I can photograph this because even though it doesn't have releases and it has products in it that, you know, that have labels and whatever, I can use it on iStock. But for the most part, when I go to a photo walk, I'm walking around with my 60D and a 28 millimeter lens on it, you know, or a lens baby or something. Mm-hmm. I'm just there to just I'm trying to step outside of that work box that I have. When a lot of iStock photographers at first, when you start, it's easy to say, oh, I don't want to take that picture because I can't sell it on iStock, you know? So I've gotten way out of that, and that's what I do.
Do you make that box? And I guess that's the ultimate point of what we were initially driving towards, is these boxes, you know? So you have a work box, you have a fun box, you have a non-photography box or something completely unrelated, which for you, it sounds like, is your pottery and your painting, which I remember we had talked about, I think, on Twitter at one point. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that. Do you make that distinction then? So do you say, okay, I'm going to spend 4 hours of my day in the work box, 4 hours of my day in the non-work box, and 4 hours of my day in the, you know, in the completely downtime box where you're not doing anything?
No, like, it all kind of blends together, I think.
It does blend together,
like,
for you?
Yeah, well, for my – I mean, while I'm doing them, I'm separating them, you know. But, like, my I don't have any family. I'm single. I don't have kids, you know. So my day, my entire day can be, oh, I'm going to work a little bit here on this project. Okay, now I'm going to switch to – I feel like painting for an hour, so I'm going to go paint, or, you know, I'm going to go out and sit at a coffee shop and write, you know. So I do – when I'm in them, I do. And I guess I do.
I don't, but I do, but kind of.
I got a spacey answer, I know.
I got this box and I got that box.
Because, well, you know, I don't have like a 9 to 5, you know. It's not like I'm like, okay, from 10 o'clock till 2 o'clock, I'm going to be editing photos. And then, for, you know.
Well, see, I know that some people, they need to, even if they are freelancing or they're working and they've got their own self-contained business, some people need that kind of a structure.
I do have some say,
You know, they say, okay, I can't spend more than 4 hours on this because I've got this project that has a deadline coming up. Mm-hmm. Like with your books, when you were writing your books, you probably had to allocate a certain amount of time each day. So you're not doing your photography work. You're not doing painting. You're not doing pottery. You're not on social media doing business and promotion things. You're actually sitting down writing.
Yeah, oh yeah, I do that. Actually, I'm writing a few things right now. A book and an ebook, and I take I work better at night when I do stuff like this. So it'll be like late in the evening and I'll go to a coffee shop and I'll sit down and I'll put some headphones on, listen to music and just write, you know, and if I do that for 2 straight hours, I can get about, I don't know, 1,000, 1,500 words. I'm kind of a slow writer, but I can, you know, I pump out a whole bunch of stuff if I just focus all my energy on that at the time. If I don't have internet going on, I guess, you know, Twitter still distracts me every once in a while, but for the most part,
Twitter's always distracting me. I don't know why. It's like, oh, hey, look, a chicken, you know, that kind of thing. What about you, Jason? How do you approach this? Because you actually have a regular 9-to-5 job. Well, I shouldn't say regular 9-to-5, but you've got a full-time job, and then you also have your photography work that is tangential to that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance your photography work versus your – and you have your normal job that I guess is going to be excluded out anyway. So how do you balance your client work versus your own personal work if you take like personal projects on where you're just like, okay, I want to take pictures of the sunset or whatever. Do you make that distinction when you do your work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, up until, you know, about the middle of last year, I was just basically a hobby shooter and like really enjoyed it. And I love my photography and it was getaway time for me. So mm-hmm. It was almost kind of, it was like, I love doing it and it's personal time.
See, that's interesting. Cause it's like, you're taking the whole thing. You're making it just one ball of wax. You're not making that distinction cause you don't have to.
Right. And like last year, like I said, I started up the business. I thought, you know, make a little money on the side, whatever, it doesn't hurt. Sure. And because of the days off at work that I had, you know, middle of the week, kind of crappy off days, I kind of resorted that I wasn't going to be doing a whole lot of business last year. So it was more of a feeling the flow sort of thing, mm-hmm. doing a lot of work, learning, a lot of the technical stuff, the reading and all that kind of
sure
blah, blah, blah. But this year, I took a little bit of different approach because now that I have the weekends off, which allows me to, you know, do the big events, you know, aka like weddings and stuff
weddings
like that.
Weddings and bar mitzvahs and all that fun stuff, right?
Yeah, so it's more of a structured thing where I'm going to have days where this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus on it. It's all about the client, make the client happy. And then there's going to be other times where I'm doing, like Nicole said, like with photo walks and stuff like that, where it's more of a release to me.
Sure.
You know, there's no expectations. It's just go out there, practice, you know, shoot and come back and chimp and talk about it and have a beer.
Or coffee. Or soda. We don't necessarily want to encourage alcoholic beverages for those of you that are under legal age. Yeah, but I think it's an interesting balance that people strike, and I think it really depends on what works best for you. Because like Nicole said, you know, if you tend to be a night owl where you work best late at night, there may be an hour here where you're focusing on client work and you're getting some post-production stuff done, while at the same time you're exploring new ways to do post-processing, or you're setting up a figurine to try different styles of lighting or whatever at the same time. So you can be multitasking in that regard and actually – accomplish both ends. So depending on what works best for you, striking a balance can vary, I'd say, from one individual to the next. It's like haircuts, you know, pick a style that works best for you. If you know how you work best, go with that approach and you'll likely be more productive. Because if you try and work against what your own natural instincts are striving towards, you'll never get anything accomplished. You won't be able to strike any balance because you're fighting against your natural tendencies. What do you guys think of that kind of mentality? And does that sum it up pretty well for your ends? Or
yeah, anything? Absolutely. I think it comes down to it's not so much, you know, personal versus client, but it's more of what makes you happy versus what's making your client happy.
Sure.
You know, sure. And at the end of the day, if it's a job to you, you have to be happy doing that job.
And I think we would all agree, if you're not in it for the right reasons, it's going to show up in the quality of your work, regardless of whether you're working for a client or for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know any photographer that's a photographer because they think they're going to be a millionaire from it. We're all photographers because we love it, you know? And I mean, I used to think when I was a kid, I used to think that if I – made photography my job. You know, this is like, well, I was like 18 or whatever. And I, you know, discovered photography and how awesome it was. I was like, oh, if I make it my job, I'm just going to get sick of it and be bored of it because it's going to be my job. And I don't know, maybe I just found, maybe I found a really great balance with, you know, doing photography as my full-time job and still completely loving my job, because it's not the case, you know. And I think for some people, when they start pushing work into their, you know, photography world, whereas before it was always just hobby, it was just fun, and then it starts to become work. That's, you know, I think people just kind of have to work out balance on their own, you know, because if you're working with clients, exactly, you're going to be doing things, you're going to be photographing things that you don't really, you're not excited about, you know, whether it's a,
do it for you, right?
Yeah, whether it's a specific portrait, you know, and the client has one vision and you have another vision. But I mean, I think in a lot of ways people are hiring you because of your vision, but you know, you're always going to run into those weird situations. So
it's funny, because another photographer friend of mine was on a photo shoot recently, and it was a TFP kind of setup where there were some models that wanted to, and TFP stands for trade for prints, for those of you that don't know. And it was a trade for print situation where he had some models come in, some young, rather inexperienced models that were trying to build a portfolio, and they wanted specific kinds of shots in their portfolio of images to choose from. And the photographer's like, this isn't a flattering, you know, in his own mind, he can tell, he's saying this isn't a very flattering picture with that pose. It's not going to work, but they wanted it. So it's like, okay, go ahead and spread eagle out over the car if you want, but it's not going to work. So, you know, he'd take the pictures and then move on to stuff that he would know would work. So, like you said, you know, and it's, when you know it's not going to work, you still have to appease the needs of your client. Mm-hmm. So, and you just got to kind of roll with that and understand that there is a balancing act that needs to be stricken at some point, and just basically bite your tongue, keep on shooting, and work past it, kind of thing. So yeah, that's pretty cool. The other portion of this that kind of ties in, because we already talked about Twitter a little bit, where it can be a distraction sometimes from actually getting work done. I still think, and I'm noticing, that a lot of Twitter conversations are revolving around business and marketing and promotion these days, where people are promoting, like for me, my most recent blog post, or for writers, you know, where they publish a new article, or for photographers, where they've published a new portfolio of images or a new photo shoot, you know, that they just finished, whether it's a model shoot or a commercial shoot like you do, Nicole. So there's a balance that always has to be struck there, too, between time spent shooting versus time spent actually working on your business end. And I remember someone said a while back, I think it was Scott Bourne actually that mentioned this, where he said 90% of photography business is running a business, and 10% of the photography business is doing the photography side of things. And, you know, it's challenging to have to deal with or accept that balancing act, because we don't want to spend all our time doing the promotion and the marketing and the hyping and, you know, upselling and getting people to come look at your latest photo shoot or look at your latest blog post or article. But it's necessary, I shouldn't say evil, but it's a necessary component of running a business. Absolutely. And I thought that'd be something interesting to tackle. And since, Jason, you are recently entering into a photography business on your own end, how you go about striking a balance between how much time you spent shooting versus how much time you spend on promotion and marketing. So go ahead. How do you deal with balancing those two ends?
It's probably the worst kind of balancing that you have to perform, because really, again, like last year, you know, I kind of got into the whole social media thing and, you know, SEO and all this kind of stuff. And and initially, you know, you think that you're just automatically going to get some sort of feedback from people.
Yeah.
You know, and you quickly realize that, you know, you have to give a little to get a little.
Right.
And I mean, in terms of the business side thing, and it's actually the first bullet point that I had for my own notes was that Scott Bourne and Skip Cohen, their podcast, they said basically what you said, that the major part of it is doing, running the business end. And, you know, if you're confident in doing your photography, then your photography will speak for itself.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't. I mean, if you have to convince people to like your photos, then you have to work on that a little bit more.
Yeah, you do have to be good at what you do before you can start promoting your what you do.
Sure. Yeah. And it makes the difference between like Scott, you know, uses the infamous term, you know, the Uncle Harry's at the weddings and the events and stuff like that.
Sure.
And, you know, it separates the professional people from those kind of people that just go out and buy an SLR and think that they can, you know, make money at doing this. But, you know, it's something that in my terms I've realized, and this is what I'm really focusing for 2011, is that, you know, aside from doing the marketing part, I'm also trying to involve myself in other people's businesses and commenting on people's blogs, because I have noticed a huge return on when you go to somebody's blog and you just simply say, you know, hey, I like your post, or, you know, I like the shot, but maybe a little constructive criticism. And you know what? It just works 100-fold.
Yeah, it comes back. Exactly. What goes around comes around.
Yeah. And but
pay it forward. That's what they call it. Pay it forward.
It is a major, major part. And I think the balancing act is more on the business side, if that's what you're into. Now, if you're a hobbyist or whatever, you know, it might not be such a big thing, but in order to succeed, you've got to have that business part, or else you're not going to have clients.
Sure. Nicole, what about you? How much time would you say you've spend on doing the business side, the promotion, the marketing, the upselling, the all that stuff, versus actually going out and shooting?
Yeah, well, the thing with my the iStock side of things, I don't really do any marketing with that, because it's iStock takes care of all of that. I mean, they keep 60% of what I make, so they do all the marketing for iStock. It's just iStock as a whole and stuff. So I don't. So as far as like trying to convince people to license my images, I don't really have to. I can if I want to, but I don't really try.
What about on the commercial side though? Because I know you do some commercial photography work in your own area.
You know, I really don't do that much, and a lot of it is just I don't really have much time. I'm busy. You know, writing books and help desk and creating my own images.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Editing, you know, I'm so backed up on editing. I think though, if you're not backed up on editing, you're not photographing enough images. But that's just
my
opinion. Yeah. So I don't really put myself out there. I don't really market myself as a work for hire kind of photographer. So that's really not even in my basket of, you know, marketing things. But what I do, most of my, I guess, quote unquote marketing is just through my blog and through Twitter, and it's mostly just branding myself and creating, you know, I do a lot of video tutorials. I love to do the Photoshop teaching. And of course I have books that I sell, and I'm marketing more to other photographers than to people to try and actually purchase my images and hire me, because of, you know, when you're teaching photography in Photoshop, then that's, you know, those are the people that's your audience. So,
right. You're probably not going to be selling photographs to photographers. Sure. That makes sense. So when I guess that kind of ties, it'd be the same principle though, regardless of whether you're marketing your photographs to purchasers or you're marketing your books and your teachings and your videos and tutorials to photographers. So on that note, how do you balance how do you strike a balance between producing content for photographers versus actually marketing and branding your work for that genre of people or whatever?
Well, oftentimes with my blog posts, it's just, you know, a lot of it is just sharing what I'm doing. You know, if I do a food, like I've been doing some food work, and I'll share the photo, and then the next day I'll share the behind the scenes, and people, you know, it's a really simple blog post. It's basically just recapping what I did. I don't have to do a lot of research or anything like that. So it's really just kind of like natural, you know, to take a photo and then stick it on my blog and talk about it. And
sure.
And I think the key with that is just really, you know, it's, I think with anything, you know, you want to be yourself, and you don't want to pretend, you know, you're something that you're not. Obviously you want to show a lot of confidence in what you're doing, but you always want to be yourself. And, especially with the, you know, with what I'm getting in with writing and teaching and help desk stuff, I think it's really important.
Yeah.
People want to see who I am, not, you know, this pretend Nicole Z person.
This pretend Nicole Z person. Pay no attention to the woman behind the curtain, right? Yeah, I remember I'd actually been seeing quite a bit of the food photography over on your blog. You had some bruschetta on there. Was it bruschetta or some?
Yeah, the olive. Bruschetta.
Fish.
I had both.
Oh, there was a bruschetta? I thought it was fish.
Yeah, I had fish too.
Yeah, I had fish. Okay. See, That tells you how much she's producing. Wow. Great. Oh, and yeah, I also forgot to mention congratulations on the help desk work, too. Okay. She's also – I didn't mention that earlier. Nicosia actually is the newest member of the help desk staff over at the National Association of Photoshop Professionals, mm-hmm. NAPP for short. So she's joined that team there as well. And if you want your questions answered by her, write into the help desk and you can get your questions answered.
Got to join NAP to do it, too. So little.
What a great segue.
I know, right?
I'm just teasing. Although that is something that's worth mentioning because I am a member of NAP. Jason, are you on NAP, I think? Had I seen you in the forums over there?
No, I am not.
Oh, you're not.
It is one of the things that I am.
We
got to
get you in. We got to get you in NAP. Join the Kelby Club. It's awesome.
Oh, Scott Kelby.
Hi, you.
Well, there's so – and it's not just Scott Kelby because there's so many people that are part of the NAP organization, Nicole also being one of them, where there's just so many resources available.
Oh, absolutely.
To you when you become a member of the NAP group. And it really is kind of – I hate to say this, but it sounds like an infomercial, but it really is a family of people.
Yeah.
If you've ever participated in the forums there, it's just – amazing. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nicole.
No, I agree with you. I think that they're just so friendly. They're just like happy people. You know, it's awesome to work with them because I wouldn't want, you know, if I would think of one organization to work with, they're one of them. And now I'm working with them. So.
And now you are. Congratulations. Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, it's all, you know, through the interweb and stuff. We're not actually like sitting on desks next to each other, but.
The interweb?
Yeah.
The interweb, that sounds like an old-timer's phrase. You're not about to use it. You're only like 24 or something. Like that. Young kids out there with the interweb comments.
You're so sweet. You're trying to,
I know, what can
make
I say?
Me feel all young and everything.
Well, I think I am the old fogey here compared to the other two that are present. So we will leave ages and numbers out of the photography conversation.
And this portion of the podcast is brought to you by eHarmony.
let's go. And move on to the last part of this, because we talked about personal versus client work, and we've talked about shooting versus the business side, and these are all really good points of topic to converse and discuss on our podcast. But the last thing I want to talk about, because this is something I've taken a personal message, I guess, to heart with, and that's about capturing and creating photos and, you know, whatever projects you're working on versus actually having downtime where you're not doing anything, where you're kind of unplugging, so to speak. Because if you look at the, I guess to use Nicole's phrase, the interwebs, if you look at the interweb and the Twitter and the Facebook and you've got email and you've got cell phones and everything is just, you know, demanding your attention. It seems almost 24/7. There always has to be a point in time where you set the camera down, where you turn off the computer and spend time with family, spend time with friends, you know, with colleagues, and basically unplugging. And I've done it once or twice in the past, and I'm taking that more of a minimalistic approach in 2011 where I am more unplugged. And it's something I wanted to kind of discuss because I think that kind of a balance is necessary because I think, Nicole, you had mentioned it when you mentioned burnout. You said something about people burning out when they try to do the same thing over and over and over all the time. It can lead to that, and if you're not careful, that can happen. So it's something that's important to strike a balance on, but then by the same token, there's risks involved. You know, there's a risk of fading from, I guess, the public consciousness. You know, do you really want to run that risk? You know, and there are always things to consider when you do that balance between photography and downtime or off time. And that's something that, like I said, I'm taking my own personal approach to, where I'm spending less time online, where I'm not publishing as many blog posts, and I'm not on Twitter as much, where I'm focusing on my family and my personal life and not as much time on photography. It's not to say I'm abandoning photography by any means, but a lot of personal growth can come from that, and you can then bring that back into photography when the time is right and publish content and material that is that much more enriching, I guess, and useful to other people. Because if you're not careful, the content that you produce will become less useful if you don't give yourself time to recharge. And that's kind of the phraseology that I was going for, was recharging. So just having said that in my own perspective, let's spin this around for Nicole and Jason and get their perspectives on the whole idea behind recharging and taking yourself offline, so to speak, to do that sort of thing. Who do we have going first here? I think we had Nicole.
Oh. Well,
so you're on.
All right. Well, kind of what I was saying earlier about getting into the painting and the pottery and stuff,
It's awesome.
That's my analog time. You know, I don't use anything digital. I don't. Why are you laughing?
That's funny. No, your analog time.
It is, because there's no computers. There's no pixels. You know, it's all working with my hands. And I mean, the pottery. Oh, that's challenging. I make mistakes. I mess it up all the time. I've got a couple paintings going on that I hate, you know, but I'm going to keep working on them. And just,
because, those are the ones I want to see.
I don't know, but you know, I do step away from the computer. I really try to, it's hard with what I do because my entire life is online for the most, you know, my entire work life is online, but, it is really good to step back and kind of breathe in the fresh air, you know, maybe take a road trip. There's absolutely nothing wrong with not taking pictures for a period of time. I had about a month where I was just like blah, you know, like I was stuck. I had no motivation, no inspiration. I didn't feel creative, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to force myself. You know, I had the luxury of not having to, you know, I'd catch up on editing and stuff if I really want to, but I didn't feel it, you know, so I took a little bit of time and kind of, I do writing too, the stuff that nobody sees, you know, I'd write, I started painting and pottery and just kind of slowly started coming back, you know, and I really started to get more excited about my work. So yeah, it's really, really important for people to do that.
So you think it is important then to have that recharge time or that offline time where you're not
Absolutely.
Constantly doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And how much time would you say is appropriate to take off? Because one thing I've noticed, like, since I've, I guess, stopped publishing, so to speak, on the blog, is I have seen some dips in traffic. You know, people don't come as often because I'm not producing as much. And I'm noticing that as you publish content, spikes come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it really depends on the person. And I think that if you feel like you need to take some time off, I mean – do what you feel is okay. You know, cause I used to blog really, really frequently, you know, almost every day. Mm-hmm. And now I've just kind of limited it to like maybe two or three times a week, but I see the same thing. It's probably people catching it on Twitter when I post it or, you know, catching it on, in the feed reader, but I think it's better to, as far as blog content goes, it's better to have better quality than just quantity. You know, I mean, I could throw a photo up every single day if I wanted to, but I you know, I don't know.
Maybe, is it worth it?
Like, yeah, exactly. I want to have a little bit of substance behind it. And I've done that before. I do, you know, put photos up. But I don't want that to be all that I do. I want there to actually be substance, or, you know, spend a couple hours and create a video tutorial and make that be my main post of the week.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's important to identify that if you are planning on taking some downtime or some time off, say a sabbatical, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it, sabbatical, I think it's a college term. But if you're going to do something like that and you've got, you know, a web body of work, whether it's photography or blogging or articles or whatever you tend to be doing, if you are going to take some time off, let those people that, you know, are in your circle of friends know, you know, so they don't all of a sudden just say, well, what the heck happened to Nicole, or what the heck happened to Jason, or what the heck happened to Scott? Because I know once I saw Scott go on vacation for a week on his blog, over on Scott Kelby's blog, and you never knew he was, or you never really thought that he was gone, because he announced it. You know, he said, I'm going to be away, but we're going to have some people filling in, so there'll be content here. And he took the time and unplugged, and people knew and understood, gave him the time that he needed to recharge, and then he came back guns blazing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's an important aspect of striking that balance between the downtime and the quote-unquote uptime. What about you, Jason? Do you? I don't know if you have any additional thoughts you wanted to chime in with, but I would like to give you a little bit of time to talk about your own approach to that as well.
You know what? It's basically everything that you guys talked about. I think the big difference is really whether you do this as a full-time job or you do it, you know, like I do it to make money on the side or whatever, or just simply because you love it. I mean – As much as a business is a business, I mean, people, you know, get addicted to photography, and that can be just as much harm as anything else, right?
Exactly. No, that's a good point.
You know, for me, because I have that full time job, you know, basically half my day's taken away, just from working my quote unquote day job. So when I tackle photography, on top of that, I really have to be self-aware of how much time I'm using up, because that is taken away from my family and my pets and my friends and everything else. So, I mean, I really have to kind of construct a schedule, if you will,
right,
to make sure that okay, you know what, on Fridays after work, it's family time, it's TV time, it's whatever it is, and I don't go near the computer.
All right. Yeah, I think I have a similar approach myself, where I actually, I guess this is the compartmentalist in me, for lack of a better phrase, is I actually have a calendar up on my wall that has Sunday through Saturday, and the whole mornings are blocked out Monday through Friday, because, or the whole regular work day is blocked out because I do have a regular day job. And I say, okay, I need to spend 4 hours creating content for the blog and for photography, and I need to spend 4 hours doing some promotion and marketing stuff, and I'm also going to take 8 hours out of that weekend and just work with family. Well, I shouldn't say work with family, but be with my family.
Right.
Yeah, being with my family is work sometimes, though, believe me. But, you know, for me, I need to have that kind of compartmentalization, that kind of structure, and I have an alarm clock, a little buzzer. So if I've got a timer of 4 hours, at the four-hour mark, when that buzzer goes off, oh, time to go to bed. Oh, time to go spend some time with the family. Oh, you know, it's time to go shift gears and do this for a while. So, yeah, it's definitely something that you need to have a balance there, regardless of your approach. If you aren't aware of the need to have some balance between your uptime and your downtime, so to speak, it's going to catch up with you eventually. And like Nicole said, you're going to have, you know, the content or the quantity may be there, but the quality won't sustain over time. So I think that's the important thing. I'm sorry, Jason, you had something else you wanted to throw out, right?
Oh, I would be very interested, and if any of the listeners actually do photography, like if you're an event photographer or something like that and you do it full-time, I'd be interested in hearing what they have to say about their downtime and how they structure their days throughout the week, because I think that it might be a little bit different, you know, when you actually have to do your photography to put food on the table. You know, you don't have the luxury of saying, well, okay, you know, I'll just put this aside and let's go to the water park or whatever. You know, it's something where, you know, I have to be at the office from 9 to 5 and I have to use my camera. So
right.
I would just be interested in hearing if anybody has any different viewpoints about it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's always something that we like to encourage is listener and reader feedback as far as how you approach striking a balance. And it can be on any one of the subjects, whether it be balancing personal versus client work, shooting versus marketing and promotion, and then also uptime and downtime and how you strike a balance and what works for you. Because one approach I've always had when it comes to the field of photography in general is you're not going to know everything, right? You know, if you think you're going to know everything there is to know, you're never going to advance, because there's so much out there that other people know that you may not have considered. So, you know, it's definitely behooving to keep your eyes and ears open. And for the readers and listeners out there, please feel free to throw your thoughts and comments into the mix. I think that's probably something we could all agree on is, mm-hmm. And that's how we network with one another, right?
Exactly.
You know, networking is a big part of how we learn and grow as photographers, both personally and professionally. So yeah, I think we're all in agreement there. It's just basically a love fest here on the Learning Digital Photography podcast. We're all agreeing with one another. Let's get some differences of opinion here. And that the best way to do that, actually talk about a segue, is with our listener Q&A, because I know we're going to have different approaches here. Our first question, I'm not sure who to throw this to. Who wants to take the noise question?
I mean, I can
silence,
talk about it. Okay, let me take a stab at it.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Let me just get the Q&A. Karen from New York writes, what's the best way to deal with noise in photos? I've heard several opinions out there ranging from using plugins in Lightroom to layer masks in Photoshop, while others just avoid high ISO at all costs. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question. Thank you, Karen, very much for writing in. Me personally, I use Lightroom you know what, I am the poster boy for using Lightroom and everything that's contained there within. If you don't have Lightroom and their excellent noise reduction, poke nudge, Scott W. there's a lot of plugins, there's a lot of software that you can use. If by some ungodly chance that I didn't have Lightroom to use, I would probably use Define from Nick Software. I'm also a huge fan of Nick. I find their software is pretty good. But again, you know what? It's one of those things where a lot of these softwares have 30-day trials to them or 14-day trials. Just go out and try them and see what works. And if you're having a lot of issues with noise and you can't seem to correct it, and if it's not a gear issue, just try and incorporate it into your photos. There's no rule that Ooh. Says that you have to get rid of noise in your pictures.
Very good point.
You can absolutely use it. I mean, there's dials and switches in our software that adds noise to photos, so why not just leave it there?
That's a very good point. Very good point. That is, noise isn't necessarily a bad thing, unless of course it's a stock photo, right, Nicole?
Yeah, well, I do shoot most of my stuff at ISO 100 just because it's a little bit cleaner, you know. But with the advances in the technology and the cameras today, it's not always a bad thing, and you can boost up the ISO, and you're not necessarily going to kill the image. And, you know, they've even made comments, the higher-ups at iStock have said, you know, hey, don't worry about noise like you used to. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, you still want to make sure the photo is clean and everything, but I started out with film, and I'd be using, like, ISO 1600 film, and there's, like, this crazy beautiful grain in that, you know, and who's to say that it can't look that good in a digital photo. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great point. Noise isn't necessarily a bad thing. I shouldn't say that this is a problem, but one of the things that I've noticed when it comes to questions and answer sessions when dealing with photography is people are always asking, what's the best way to? You know, what's the best lens? What's the best camera body? What's the best noise plugin or way to deal with noise? Or what's the best lighting style? You know, take your pick of any number, one of a number of questions, and everyone's always asking, what's the best whatever? So to Karen, I would actually say that whenever you ask a question like that, whenever you start a question with what's the best, the answer invariably is always going to come back with it depends as the leading part of that final answer. You know, it's going to depend whether or not that noise, like Jason said, is the noise a function of the gear that you're using, of the way that you're shooting? Is it a function of the lighting conditions? You know, if you're shooting at night and you've got a 5-second exposure, you're going to have noise. Right. There's no two ways around, you know, and it depends. Are you going for the high noise look? Like you said, it, you know, it really can depend totally on the person. And that's my whole point, is it's completely subjective, and it really is going to depend, and I hate to say it, but it's going to depend on what your end result goal is. And if your end result goal to quote unquote deal with noise is producing stock photography, well, don't shoot at night. Or use flashes, or, you know, use whatever tools that are available to you to try and keep noise to a minimum during capture.
And to add to that, I will say that if it's – there are some, you know, photography genres where you're going to have high ISO images. You're going to have noise in your images. Like, let's say wedding photography. I don't photograph weddings, so I don't have a lot of personal experience with it. But I'm, you know, the goal is not to always, you obviously want really clean and beautiful images, but the moment is going to be more important than the noise quality in the photograph. You know, like if it's, oh crap, I have to crank this ISO up to 3200 if I want to get this image, this scene that's happening right now, then do it. You know, don't not get the photo because you think it's going to not look good. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Don't be afraid to crank the ISO because, like you said, you know, it's capturing the moment in time. If you don't capture the moment, it doesn't matter whether there's noise or not, because there's no image to capture, or there's no image captured to really deal with. And then when it comes to post-processing, it really is going to depend on what your workflow is. You know, if you're a Lightroom user, like Jason had mentioned, your workflow in dealing with noise is going to be vastly different from someone that uses Aperture. Or vastly different from someone – I shouldn't say vastly, but significantly different from someone that uses Aperture or someone that uses iPhoto or someone that uses Photoshop exclusively? Or what about
Uncharted Mask?
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many different approaches to it. It really depends. and I hate saying that because people don't like those kind of evasive answers, and I don't mean to be evasive, but you know, without more information, without knowing, you know, are you talking about a specific photo? And that's another factor that pulls into the equation too. Specific photos will require different massaging of the pixels, if you will, to remove noise if that's what you need to do. So I hate to say it, but the answer really is a dependent answer. And without knowing more details, it's going to be hard to give a be-all, end-all answer because there is no one situation that fits everything.
And the thing I would say to Karen, too, is I would throw the ball back in her court and say, what have you tried?
There you go. Great answer. Great answer.
With software and stuff like that, like I said, there's a lot of free trials out there. There really is no excuse for just trying stuff. I mean, when people ask me about different software that I use and stuff like that, and I say to them, you know, that they might ask me what works best or what's easiest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what have you tried?
Right. No, I totally agree. Well, thank you, Karen, very much for the question, and hopefully our collective answer has been one that's assuaged your curiosity or concerns. Assuaged, there's a big word for you. Our next question. That's right. Go to dictionary.com. Look it up. Our next question comes to us from Phil in Las Vegas. Phil writes in and says, just getting started in photography and wondering if I can build a business in this market. Man, this is going to be a loaded question. What? Wow, he's got like four questions. What are the pitfalls I should be wary of? On the same note, would it be better to – wow. Did I write that question out? I don't remember writing all that out. I think I did a copy-paste. He's basically asking about what pitfalls should he start a business. If he does, what pitfalls should he be concerned with? And then the last question, it looks like he's debating between going solo and becoming part of a collaborative business effort, right? Should I work with other photogs? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Loaded question. This could probably be a whole podcast.
Do you know what, though? I've got the perfect answer for this.
Ooh. Okay, go ahead.
Perfect answer is go read Fast Track Photographer by Dane Sanders.
Yeah.
It is your one-stop shop for this whole topic. And Dane Sanders did such an amazing job with the book. He basically puts you on one of two paths, and there's a self-assessment tool with the he calls it the PDNA test, which is photographer, and the DNA, D is for discovery, N is for negotiation, and A is for activation. And you take the test. Like I said, it's a self-assessment tool. It's online. You get to do it once when you purchase the book. There's a code in the book somewhere. And based on that test, you know, he gives you recommendations. And as you read the book, you start to discover things about yourself. You start to discover your strengths, your weaknesses. You know, it really comes down to, I think what Phil is trying to get at is, you know, does he want to be the quantity freelance photographer, or does he want to be the quality branded photographer where, you know, his photography kind of speaks for himself? And that's what I would recommend, really. I mean, there's so many variables when you're starting a business, but that book will definitely help make his decision. And
what's the book again? It's Fast Track Photographer by Dane Sanders.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. And there's a Kindle version to it.
Okay. What we'll do is we'll throw a link up in the show notes where you can order it online, so you can do it through Amazon, put it on your Kindle. You can get it through Barnes & Noble or whoever you want. So we'll go ahead and throw a link to that book up in the show notes. That'll be published when this goes live. That's a great answer. It sounds like a great resource. I've not read that personally, so I'm going to have to take a look at that. Nicole, you kind of sounded off in agreement, like you had read the book as well. So let's get your perspective. How would you answer Phil's question about starting a business in this market? I think his concern is more economics of it. So, well, I don't know if that.
It's interesting because the question, what he says is he's just getting started in photography. And I mean, I guess learn photography. I don't know, Phil. I don't know, you know, maybe he's been doing photography for a long time. He's finally getting back into it. But it can be easy to think, you know, that, you know, all you need is a camera and a few lenses and, mm-hmm. oh, I can photograph my friends and, you know, and then, oh, look, I can do this for other people and they can pay me. You know, it's easy to think that way. And obviously people get started because they do things like that. But I guess don't jump ahead of yourself. I think some of, you know, you build a portfolio. A lot of the time, whatever you're doing with photography, whatever your photographic genre is or whatever, you're going to be working for free a lot before you're actually making any money off of it. You know, and when I say working for free, I mean, people are paying you, but you're probably putting all that money back into the business. So right. you're not actually going to profit from it. But build a portfolio. Don't buy more than you think you need. You know, get the basics right. built on it. Because I think we all do. We all think, oh, I need all this, these lenses and this lighting equipment. You know, I have a bunch of stuff that's sitting around that I don't even use. And I probably didn't yeah. use it that much that I could probably sell back and get some money off it. So, I mean, those are just some basic tips. You know, I mean, it's not easy. It's really difficult. You know, even really, really, really amazing photographers have a hard time with, the, you know, getting into the actual business side of things.
Yeah.
So
I think David Zeiser had a really good commentary on the state of the industry on his guest post over on Scott Kelby's blog a few days ago. Was it this week or last week? I forget when it was. But he made a really good observation where he was saying that the business – environment, the business for someone that's into photography for, as a business, the environment has changed and the landscape for it has changed drastically, even over the last 5 years. And a big part of his answer was the ability to adapt mm-hmm. to changing environment. And I think that's going to be huge. And Nicole, you make a good point. You know, if he's just getting started in photography, first learn the craft.
Yeah.
You know, if you're still learning the craft, you're not going to be very successful in the business environment side of it because you haven't achieved any measure of credibility, so to speak, where you don't have a published portfolio, if I can talk. If you don't have a published portfolio, you don't have client testimonials, you don't have references. You know, if you don't have these things in place as part of your business, it's going to be harder to launch that business. Now, if you're just talking about getting started in the photography business side of things and you've been shooting for a while, then it's a slightly different story. Then it's about, well, building some kind of identity, building a brand identity, having a website. You know, are you linked into Twitter or LinkedIn for that matter? You know, knowing what the business environment expects, you know, is a big part of understanding how to – which kind of goes into what we were talking about earlier about balancing actually shooting and then spending time promoting and marketing your work. Do you have that 90-10 ratio going on? You know, if you're spending all your time shooting and not telling anyone what you're shooting, how are people going to know what you're shooting? You know, so there's a lot that goes into that, and it's a whole laundry list of questions. I really don't think we have time because we're going on nearly an hour now. So hopefully that answer is going to have to suffice. Thank you, Phil, for writing in with your question. Our last question, I'm not sure I want to answer this one, so I'm going to defer to you guys. Nicole, why don't you go ahead and take this one from Catherine?
All right, Catherine in Milwaukee. Catherine in Milwaukee, she says, everyone always talks a good game about lenses, but it's tough to be taken seriously when people have better camera bodies than I do that have one-tenth the experience or knowledge. How do you deal with clients who have better gear than you? I'm not sure if she meant clients. Other photographers, possibly? We'll go with that.
How do you people have better gear?
Well, you know what, though? In all honesty, it might be clients because I remember reading a post, a blog post quite some time ago, and it was a photographer that was warning clients that they should be looking for certain pieces of gear before you hire them.
Oh, I see. Like, oh, okay. So
you see what I'm saying? So like one of the questions that this person thought they should, that the client should be asking is, do they have a 2.8 lens?
They think that the gear that they have makes the photographer better or worse. Is that the,
Okay. Well, I think that's what
see, I from the question. It's interesting. Cause I see what your point about that is. I'm not sure that's what she – and here we go reading into people's questions again when we don't know their minds, right? And that's always the danger here. But the way I read it is she was saying she's going up to clients with her 40D or her 50D or even her 70D and looking to book a gig, and the client themselves has a 5D Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, how can a client take her seriously if – her gear isn't even as good as theirs.
Well, I guess I think that if
that's how I read it.
Okay, here, let's go back to that. The answer for number one, it depends. it really depends on the client. You know, like if you have someone, if a client who has, I don't know, I have a lot of cameras, so I'm not a good example. But if, you know, if there was a client who had equipment, but they understand, you know, about photography and that, you know, even if so-and-so has an older camera and maybe they don't have a prime lens, I don't know. I that's a tough question.
That's why I gave it to someone else.
Thanks.
It's tough, but at the end of the day, like I said, your photos should speak for themselves.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So confidence, I think that's a lot of it is, you know, if you have a really solid portfolio, you know, show people your portfolio. And if they're like, well, what's your camera gear? You know, that, I don't know. You could go into some like soapbox talk about it. It's not about the gear. It's about the, you know, the photographer. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you obviously want to, there's a lot of politics involved when you're trying to get someone to hire you. So I don't know. It's a tough one because I understand it. You know, people look at me when I have either my 7D or now I have my 5D Mark II as well, but mostly my 7D with the grip on it. People are like, whoa, look at that camera. You must be a good photographer. And I'm like, I just kind of smile and nod, you know, I'm like, oh, whatever.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks.
It's a nice cooking pot. That must make some great food. Sorry. That's me getting in my soapbox again. I think the part of that question that intrigued me the most is when she said 1/10 the experience or knowledge. So it's like she's kind of combining gear and experience at the same time. So it's like, well, it's almost like a sarcastic little twist. Well, it's like, well, yeah, you have this, at least the way I'm reading it, maybe I'm reading into things, but it's like she's saying she sees these people that have these nice high-end bodies and lenses, but they don't even know what they're doing with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in her defense, I know a few people like that.
Oh, so yeah,
I've got a friend that's got a 5D Mark II. Well, I shouldn't say a friend, but I know a doctor, a certain medical doctor that's got a 5D Mark II, and he's got probably $15,000 worth of lenses. So he's got all these lenses sitting around, and they're collecting dust because he doesn't know how to use them. He doesn't want to drag out his 600mm prime because it's too heavy. And I'm like, you're hand holding with a 600 prime. Oh my god. You know, inside my head, it's just exploding because it's like, yeah, you'd love to have that gear, but, you know, it's painful to watch when people who have it don't know how to use it. So
just tell them that I'll pay for the shipping to Canada.
Yeah, there you go. And I think at least that's what I got out of her question was a little sense of frustration over people that have gear that either don't use it or don't know how or don't have the experience, and then they ask her questions like, well, why should I hire you when I've got all this gear myself? And my response to that would be, well, because I use my gear. And I know you can't say it that way to a potential client.
Yeah, but if you have gear, why don't you just take the pictures yourself?
Well, exactly.
Well, and that's kind of the answer you have to give is like, listen, you know, if you feel that you're capable of taking these images yourself, you know, I don't want to try and discourage you from doing that, but by the same token, if you're not interested in taking the pictures, what kind of gear I have really shouldn't matter because you obviously want me to take your pictures. So who cares if I'm running around with a 40D and you've got a 5D Mark II or like Nicole said with her 1DS Mark II, which I'm salivating after as well. But
I mean, I do.
That's a whole other story.
There are some things, you know, if you're a wedding photographer, I keep going back to that just because I remember there's this horrible, horrible video on like a judge.
Judge Brown.
Yeah. Oh,
I saw that. Oh, what a horrible video.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yeah.
This woman who did not know how to do photography very well. She had really old gear that was just not appropriate for the type of photography she was trying to do. And that's really kind of the key. It's not that the gear she had wasn't. I mean, she shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. But it's, you know, you need to be prepared for the type of job. You have to get the right tools for the job you're going to do. You know, I'm not going to use a 17mm fisheye for my food photography. So, you know,
that'd be an awkward piece of bruschetta if it was.
So it's about having the right tools for the job. And if you feel like you have the right tools for the job, and you've shown it in your portfolio and the work that you're showing your clients, then they shouldn't really judge you based on what you have.
Right. So. Oh, well, that's a very good point about judging people on their gear. If someone is judging you based on the gear you have, then they're not looking at the right elements. They should be looking at, like you said, your style of shooting, you know, what your portfolio says about you, that sort of thing, instead of saying, well, you don't have the 600 millimeter prime, so why should I talk to you? You know, if they have that approach, you're not going to get them as a client, and you probably don't want them as a client.
Exactly.
Would be my answer.
So, yeah. And I think that I personally, I guess the most politically correct way I could be, I would literally take the Scott Bourne approach to it, and I would ask the client, well, why did you call me? Why did you want to set up this interview? And, you know, more than likely they're going to say, well, I liked your photos. And I would just simply say, well, my photos were taken with this gear.
Yeah.
You know, and if that offends you, then you can find somebody with the appropriate gear that you'd like. But, you know, I'm not as photographers. I mean, we're all gearheads. But
yeah, what David Duchemin say? He said, "Gear is good, but vision is better."
Mm-hmm. That's
I love that phrase. That is probably the best answer to this question, I think. That's a very good point. You know, gear is great. You know, there's nothing wrong with having the latest and greatest. But if you don't have the vision, and if you don't have the self-confidence, you know, that projects out. And I say that projects out. You know, if you don't have a certain amount of confidence and pride in your own work, when someone does question you because you don't have the gear or whatever – then, you know, would it matter if you had the gear? You know, if you don't have the self-confidence, what difference does gear make? Mm-hmm. If you don't have the vision, what difference does gear make? You can have, like you guys said, a Hasselblad, and, you know, if you can't look upside down and in reverse, you're not going to be able to do that large format. You're not going to be able to operate that large format camera, which is why I don't operate one, because I can't look like that. I'd have to stand on my head and put a mirror in there to operate a large format. I can't look at things that way. But anyway, it's a great question. It was a great discussion. So thank you, Karen, for your question.
That was Catherine, actually.
What did I say, Karen?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'm losing control of my own show here. We better end fast. Hurry. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Catherine. Who else? Oh, thank you, Nicole and Jason, for coming on the show.
No, thank you.
It's been a fun show. We are actually past the hour mark. We're at an hour and 10 minutes. So we are going to wrap things up and thank everyone, which I've already done. And a special shout out once again to Nations Photo Lab for being a sponsor of the podcast. Appreciate their sponsorship and support over the years. You can find the show notes for the podcast over on canonblogger.com. As we roll out for this podcast, where can we find you two online? Jason, go first.
You can find me on my blog at blog.jasonkphotography.com. That's with the C, by the way. And
we'll link to it in the show notes as well. So
In the famous words of Alex Lindsay, you can find me on the Twitters @Jason_Kate.
Jason_Kate. And Nicole, where can we find you?
I am also on the Twitters, Nicole Z. Nicole Z, it's NicoleSy, and I'm on a blog. My blog is NicoleZblog.com.
And we will have links to both their Twitter profiles and their websites in the show notes. And if you're listening to this podcast, you know where to find me.
Well, but I'll say it anyway.
You can find me on my website, canonblogger.com, which is where this podcast is being hosted. And you can also find me on the Twitterverse.
Ooh.
I'm going to go a different direction on the Twitterverse at CBJason, Canon Blogger Jason, CBJason @CBJason. So thank you, everyone, for coming on the show. Thank you for the questions. And thank you to the listeners for taking the time out of your day, out of your workout or your commute to listen to the show. We will see you next time here at Learning Digital Photography.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.